Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a short week. I am in Las Vegas, as you can see behind me. There were people and clears and excitement and flyovers and Ice Cube played at halftime. And, Lil Jon was in the house, in the club in Vegas. And, you know, everything felt like it was there. Certainly early in the game, there was good vibes. Even late in the game, when things got a little too nervous for all of us, Lamar darts left, he darts right. Next thing you know, Tucker's out doing what Tucker does. And then overtime happens, and then you lose, and then you got to fly home, and then you're on short rest, and then you don't have Tyree Phillips, and then Patrick Mahomes shows up. Luke, I wanted to talk a little baseball with you because we've done a lot on, you know, on the game and on all of this. You spent some time downtown last weekend. One of the things I've lamented with the Orioles and their awfulness and the rat in the stadium and all of that is just having something exciting and fun, right? You know, whether it was going to be that Garth Brooks concert that now is not happening, whether it was the Vegas trip that didn't happen for a lot of people because of price or COVID. This Chiefs game, and I talked about the FIFA people coming in and the World Cup and all of that. This Chiefs game, it's not quite Keith Urban, you know, kicking off the season and all that. But this is one of those games. Nobody's been to a game in a while. A lot of people haven't been. I actually said to Jeff Zrebeck and Jameson, the only two media members that traveled out here to Las Vegas, I said, this feels nice being in a stadium that's full before the game began and having that energy and that vibe going on 20 minutes before the game. The Orioles certainly don't have that, right? And there's been nothing remotely like that at any point, right? Sunday's supposed to represent that a little bit. And I think for the city, for Baltimore and Baltimore Positive and all that is good, the golf tournament represented that, I think, for a lot of people that were privy to that and participated in that. But this Chiefs game was a centerpiece over the last couple of years to get Patrick Mahomes into our building where we have people, which we didn't have last time. All I have, you were there. All I have is the fireworks shot from my building because I wasn't at the game last year. To your point, didn't go so well. The vibe and the energy that's going to be necessary in the building, that old Ray Lewis dance thing and all of that. I don't know. This is a pretty big, momentous thing happening here on the backside of people staying up late. And a lot of people went down to the stadium on Monday night for the game. There's a lot of emotion going on, I think, for the Baltimore sports fan that may have even tuned in on the Orioles over the weekend as to what sucking really is about. Lamar doesn't suck. The Ravens don't suck. What the Orioles are doing is a different level. And the Ravens, and I, as I sit here in the press box in Las Vegas, the Ravens are the great Baltimore hope. And getting kicked in the nuts in Vegas on Monday night's bad enough, but then gathering down there Sunday night for something, I don't want to say it feels funereal, but it does feel like a hell of a hill they're going to have to climb Sunday night to not be 0-2 on Monday morning.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, I think fans will be excited. I think,
but then they got
to
win.
You get closer to Sunday, and people get a chance to tailgate. And to your point, it's been a long time. I mean, people who may have gone to the New Orleans game. I mean, it was a preseason game, and we know that we've done this enough now—a quarter century of Ravens football, the NFL being back in town—that preseason games. That's not the same thing. So I think there'll be plenty of excitement. But yeah, I mean, the urgency level is through the roof because you just said it, and I mentioned it in our previous conversation. You fall to 0-2. Go look at the numbers. I mean, it's not pretty. I mean, it's not impossible by any stretch of the imagination. Let's be very clear about that. But you're just putting yourself in such a hole then. And okay, what's Cleveland doing in the meantime? What's Pittsburgh doing in the meantime? What's Cincinnati? Who? Hey, the Bengals, they won a thriller over the Vikings. And say what
and
you want
kid
about.
That looks like he can play.
I was just going to say what you want about their O line or their defense, but Joe Burrow, and we thought that last year at times he flashed before he hurt his knee. That you thought, okay, he's got a ways to go, and he doesn't have an offensive line, and ultimately they caused his knee to get wrecked. But you look at this division, and I'm not expecting the Bengals to be there, but maybe Sunday was a reminder that people were counting out the Steelers a little bit, if for no other reason than their defense looking really good. I mean, say what you want about their offense, but you fall to 0-2. and all of the energy is just zapped out of the season. We saw this in 2015. You know, I mean, clearly the injury snowballed and just got to a silly level as the season went on. But we saw what happened when Terrell Suggs goes down in week one with an Achilles injury, and you lose, and then you lose again. And suddenly it's 0-2. You're 0-2, and it feels like the season's on the brink already. And I'm not saying that's going to happen for this team. This team is much more talented and better than that 2015 team, at least in my mind. And the last couple of years would support that thinking. But it you do get to a point where you lose a game like this, where I still am not convinced the Raiders are a particularly good football team. I'm not saying they stink. They you know, give them credit. You know, their defense came up big in some key moments, and Derek Carr and that offense played much better in the second half, but still not a team I'm anticipating being a playoff team. So those losses that the Ravens have had in the Lamar Jackson era to a team that people would say they're, you know, is inferior to them, a team that they were favored over, that's rare. New England last year, okay. You know, in the rain, it was weird. Nick Boyle gets hurt in that game. But those types of games, they played so well on the road, especially against teams that they were supposed to beat over these last few years. So you lose a game like that, and you start 0-1, and you come home, and that team that, let's face it, and you mentioned it as far as you play like this, and you come home, and you're looking at a team that you know is better than you. The Ravens could have won 50-0 on Monday night. And I'm still saying the Chiefs are better than them until they beat the Chiefs. I mean, that's just where they are at this point. Yeah, it has to be that way. I mean, you can have that optimism as a fan, but if you're looking at it objectively, you've seen how this movie is played out. And until the Ravens show that they can go toe-to-toe and everyone points to the defense and the pass rush, go back and look at those games. If you're going to beat the Chiefs, you need to score over 30 points, and the Ravens haven't been able to do that in those previous meetings, and they've come up short as a result. So it really is a collective effort there, and it's why it's so important for them to, they really do have to move past this game so quickly. And that's kind of coach speak. You hear a coach say that every week, but it's so true when you're talking about late flight, getting home early Tuesday morning, quick turnaround, you get these guys off their feet, but they're back in the building and you're back on the practice field probably late Wednesday. You know, John will give them a little bit of an extra rest, a little respite there for their bodies to recover, but that is a quick turnaround. And even looking at it historically, you'll find that Monday night road teams, you know, that's a challenge the following week because it's just a shorter week, especially when it's a long travel to your opponent playing.
Well, no one's going to like the Ravens this week, right? No one on national TV.
How could
national,
you?
No one's going to like the Vegas. Nobody's going to like the Ravens this week.
I mean, how could you? I mean, taking off the purple colored glasses. And look, I am not saying that they have no chance to win, but if you're trying to objectively look at it and pick the game, I don't know how you could pick the Ravens, you know, unless you're just picking an upset because that happened.
I'm here in Vegas. I can lay a bet.
And again, that's not to say it can't happen. It's just based on the information we have and recent history and knowing what Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes have done to the Ravens defense, which we were hoping going into the year was their strength, knowing that the offense might be sputtering behind a little bit more. And, you know, the Ravens have had a damn good offense the last couple of years, and they scored 27 points on Monday night. And it's not to say that I think the Chiefs will shut them down, but are you going to go toe to toe with Patrick Mahomes? Are you going to be able to get stops against that Chiefs offense when you need to? We know that answer has been no each of the last 3 years. They fought, they've competed, they battled more so in 2018 and 19 than last year. But you have to hope that you make some of those corrections. You know, depending on what happens with Tyree Phillips, which obviously that did not look good. You hope that whoever's playing left guard, whether it's Ben Powers or Ben Cleveland, you hope that solidifies. You hope Alejandro Villanueva with a game under his belt feels a little more comfortable next week, but boy, it's a lot of ifs and buts, and that's not what you want to have when you're talking about Kansas City coming to town. So it really is one of those scenarios where I think the crowd will be jacked just because it's prime time and you know, people having a chance to go to a game for a real meaningful game for the first time in 2 years. But it's unsettling thinking about the prospects of potentially falling 0-2 and then having back-to-back road games and knowing that you know, boy, that first quarter of the season, you could be not completely buried, meaning it's over, but buried to the point where you were going to have a steep climb the rest of the way. And that's with knowing the second half of the schedule is even more difficult than the first half. So we've talked about that second half schedules. That's why I thought it was so key for this team to try to be 6-1 through their first seven games. Well, they could still do that, but they don't have any margin for error left. And yeah, the Chiefs come into town. That's not the team that you want to be trying to figuring out things on both sides of the ball.
As I make my escape from here in Las Vegas, all of our WNST coverage brought to you by our friends at Raskin Global. Leonard will be here a little later on in the week. All of our contributors, Bill Cole, Todd Schuler, Dennis, who comes on the show. We're going to be doing a lot of football here this week, going out to Kansas City. Luke's going to be out of training camp. All right, Luke, you know, I don't talk a lot of Orioles here. I don't want to wind you up too much, and I certainly – it's been a long night already here in Vegas. But something has to be said, at least in the here and now, that, you know, you're out there covering the team. You were downtown Saturday for the fiasco, doubleheaders, blowing no-hitters late in game. Go ahead, man. Let's at least give it 5 minutes on baseball.
5 minutes? 5 seconds is about all I have. I mean, I don't really know what to say. They're rebuilding. We knew they were going to be bad this year.
For people that aren't watching and only see the score, what would you say about what's happening on the field right now? Because a lot of people say, well, it's baseball. September, this is when they call people up. And, like, that's not what you do when you're going to lose 110 games and start the clock on 1-1 prospects, right, with Rutschman. And we have a lot of football fans here that may be channeled in or channeled out. But what is going on with them? You know, they're rolling the ball out, and they have to go – make 27 outs or 21 outs and, you know, 42 outs. If you play 2 7-inning games, they had to get 42 outs the other day, right? Like, that's, they have a hard enough time getting 27 outs.
Yeah. I mean, it just comes down to, they don't have nearly enough pitching. They didn't have enough pitching when they were healthy. And then Matt Harvey's done for the year with a sore knee, and Bruce Zimmerman, we know, had the bicep, and then he hurts his ankle, you know, kind of working his way back, just training. I mean, you just look at the names, and I really don't know what to say from the standpoint of, they're really lousy. They have lots of young players that in the minor leagues that are worthy of being excited about. You know, Gunnar Henderson just got called up to Double A, for example, and, you know, Rutschman's a Triple A now, and I mean, Grayson Rodriguez has had a successful year, but, you know, what's happened at the major league level? I mean, on the pitching side, it's names you don't recognize. I'm someone who, not out there every night at this point now with my Ravens coverage responsibilities, but, you know, they're calling up guys and claiming guys off waivers that go to AAA for 3 weeks, and then they're up in the major leagues just because they need someone to throw innings for them. And I mean, it's just, I don't know what people's expectations were. They're, you know, through Monday, they're 46-97. It's awful. Do I think it'd be better if they had 5 more wins under their belt or 10 more wins under their belt? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what kind of value that is, other than your draft pick being worse then. So,
well, the only time it comes to my social media is when some guy's chasing a rat around the bowl of the stadium, right?
Yeah.
Or when they're throwing a no-hitter, as they did, which is interesting. They had one of those earlier this year. But when they're losing 22-4, yeah, and when, you know, the 30-3 moments happen and, like, all of that. But then the video of Brandon Hyde MFing one of the best pitchers in baseball, like, it's unseemly, you know? Like, that's not what – that shouldn't come to my timeline like that. I mean, I don't – know how long he is for the world. Clearly they gave him nothing to work with. You know, I spent time with Tom Perlazzo, and 15 years later, Sam Perlazzo still would say, we didn't have baseball players. I played the Yankees every night and the Red Sox every night. And they gave me, you know, no offense to Melvin Mora and whatever, but that's our stars. We're not even at that point with this group to know who these guys are, wherever. But for Brandon Hyde to be the manager of it, to show up on my timeline with stuff that is wildly inappropriate for Don Mohler's grandkids who love the Orioles, I think in that particular case, that's not the social media you need to be making on a weekend at the ballpark. I just thought, And I know Earl Weaver was saltier than that in the day and all that. But I saw the Canadian coverage of that, and I just thought, that's not good for business.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people are paying attention, to be honest, at this point. I mean, I'll say this. I thought the accusation is signed. I mean, if the Orioles are cheating at this point, they're doing an all-time terrible job at it. So I think, yes, the language inappropriate, and Brandon Hyde even acknowledged as much after the game. I think he's sticking up for his players. And I do think, I mean, look, say what you want about ownership, say what you want about the front office, say what you want about the philosophy of rebuilding, tanking, whatever you want to call it. The players and the coaches out there, they're trying. I mean, they are. You see, they're competing. Just they don't
hard,
have
hard. They're not millionaires. They're not
right. I mean, they just don't have the talent to succeed. They don't. I mean, it's obvious, especially on the pitching side. I mean, you look at the lineup. Cedric Mullins has had a fantastic season. Ryan Mountcastle since early May has been outstanding. Trey Mancini's had how could you not be proud of what he's done? You know, they've got, you know, Austin Hayes has had another good
Mullins
September.
Mountcastle and Mullins were both guys that could be, you know, like we looked at Mountcastle in May and thought maybe not. Maybe this is the next coming of the last catcher that was not good enough, right? I would say they've had successes here. But it's shadowed behind the fact they're going to lose 110 games.
Well, and I mean, their pitching is so incredibly overwhelmed. I mean, it just, their pitching does not have the capability, especially with, you know, Matt Harvey had actually pitched pretty well since the All-Star break. He was god awful in the first half. He's actually pitched decently in the second half of the season, competitive at least. And Bruce Zimmerman was competitive until he got hurt in June. I mean, they don't have enough guys. I mean, they have John Means and then, I mean, you're seeing Keegan Aiken, God bless. He had six no-hit innings until the seventh inning on Saturday night in the nightcap. And, you know, Dean Kramer gets called back up because he had pitched pretty well at AAA and gets completely knocked around. And guys you've never even heard of. You know, I mean, seriously, I mean, I say it tongue-in-cheek, but they've had guys that they've called up at random points over the last 3 months that even people that cover the team aren't familiar with, because they're non-prospects. They're just placeholders. And, you know, so as much as there's been some encouraging developments on the position player side, not that they have enough, but you at least look at Mullins and you say, hey, it's their center fielder now. No questions asked. It's not that fourth outfielder we were thinking he might have been a year ago or 2 years ago. Ryan Mountcastle, as much as I had doubts about his plate discipline, look at what his on-base percentage has been since June. He's drawn far more walks now. You know, he's looked like a guy who can work the count and draw some walks. So there have been some isolated positives, but on the pitching side, rotation and bullpen, it has just been an absolute disaster. And when you cannot pitch at all, and I'm not talking, you know, that five ERA bad pitchers relative to a contender. I'm talking about guys who put you in a position where you're giving up 22, 24 runs over nine innings where it's not even competitive, to the point where you might as well roll a tee out there and put the ball up there and just see if you can get the hitter to hit it to you in the field. It's impossible to win. It's impossible to win on any kind of a regular basis. And yeah, that means you win some games here and there. And, you know, they've had, since the long losing streak,
Means actually, pitches every fifth day.
Yeah, but since the embarrassing losing streak, they had a couple stretches where it wasn't terrible. You know, they've had some, you know, 5-5 stretches, things like that. But, you know, more often than not, it's the embarrassing, lousy, terrible pitching that, you know, you get lopsided scores and you get teams like the Blue Jays coming in licking their chops as they're trying to secure one of the wild card spots in the AL. And all the Orioles are in a dogfight with the Arizona Diamondbacks trying to secure the number one pick. I mean, that's where we are. We knew that this was going to be a long process. Mike Elias did not lie about it when he came in. And, you know, we're into year three of it. And, you know, no progress at the major league level from a win-loss standpoint. That's obvious. But, you know, they keep pressing on, and you hope you start to see more progress and more of these prospects arriving in 2022, but they're playing out the string, and it's a bunch of randos who frankly don't belong in the majors. And I'm not saying that to be disrespectful to any of these guys. God bless them. They're getting an opportunity, but frankly, opportunities that aren't warranted if we're being honest.
Luke, do you need me to bring you some Raiders water? I know where I can find some here in the press box. I am in Las Vegas. All of our WNST coverage all week long in Baltimore Positive. Brought to you by our great sponsors, our seafood sponsors, our friends at Fadley's. We're going to be at Costas this week, so make sure you're getting some crab cakes out there. Don't eat any tourist crab cakes for sure. Maryland Crab Cake Tour is making its way to my homeland on Friday with Johnny O. A little Purple Friday, a little pep rally to get ready for the Chiefs and baseball season. And hopefully things will move in a better direction than they moved out here in the desert on Monday night. Ravens lose 33-27. Luke will be in Owings Mills for the short week all week. If there's any breaking news, you'll get it first on the WNST Tech Service, all brought to you by our friends at Coons Ford of Security Boulevard. Dennis is going to be here driving you home on Thursday and then getting you ready for the game on Sunday. We got Sunday night football. The FIFA people coming in this weekend talking about the World Cup as well. And I'm going to be getting back from Las Vegas. You can find Luke at WNST.net. He's also Baltimore Luke out on Twitter and Facebook and all through the Instagram and social media world. I'm out on the LinkedIn and every other place, nasty at WNST.net. I'm flying safely back. We'll see you on the other side as we get back and full coverage ahead. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore Positive, even from the desert in Vegas.